Okay. Then my uncle was sent over here to start this ranch in America on Houston Street in Lower Manhattan was the place, and some helpers came with him, and it worked up a good business in America. And in this Second World War, not after the First World War, America didn't take it, claim it, but in the Hitler War, when that was over, America took over that factory. It just cost the old employees, like my uncle, they're all gone. My uncle died, came over here in 98 and died in 1907 on something like cholera. A neighbor from water in New York said he got poisoned, but he died from it. She died a few years ago, 90 years old. But my aunt, coming over here married and just being a housewife, she took a long time till she learned English. She was so, stayed a greenhorn so long, you know, that she would have felt all lost here. And my uncle's concern promised and paid her a pension all the years that she would stay single. It would stop if she got married again in Germany, which she later on did. So they had two children, and Pauline was already, when I came in 1904, she was about 4 years old, and she was about seven when my aunt left, and she had a younger child, a little boy. He died, and then they had a second child again, and she was a girl again. And here in 64, she came over here to visit me. Since then, she died. She was born in New York. She could come in any time. Her sister, too. And my aunt is dead, too. The whole family is gone by now. But anyway, they were the ones that had me come over, because my grandmother was always reporting how badly I was treated and all that. So, and they had their little children, and they could use a girl like me to help my aunt. And my other uncle, they're all dead by now. You see, I'm getting so old, so all relatives and friends die away from me. And that was why and how we came over here to America. Now, you know, wherever there were Germans, in every big city you had some German clubs where you would go Saturday nights and sing and dance and do whatever, or if you were a bookworm, you went to lectures about books or whatever. And so in Long Beach, you see, then the war came, and that killed everything German. We sold the park to the government. We sold the big buildings, gymnasiums, and all they had in Los Angeles. It's all dead because of the notoriety about Hitler. So when the war stopped, and when it got normal again, and America again opened their door for a certain amount of Germans, then the clubs, mostly the singing clubs, the Mozart Choir and the Working Men's Choir, and there was the Beethoven Choir, and there was the Rhinelander Choir, and you see, their time to enjoy, to visit, and to be together. Well, they started slowly again after this was all over, and Long Beach used to have a German club too, but it didn't have then. So, 3-4 people that I knew from a long time ago from Los Angeles, and I, we started very small, we called it the German Society until it had a name, where we would go to dinner together, or sing a song, or tell jokes or something. Anyway, that started then, and I was on a committee for it. And it grew and it grew, because there's not many places like that where you can congregate and have a meal and do some singing and some dancing and, you know, have an evening out like that. And so it grew very fast. But I, having so much to do with my tenants and all, I was really too busy to take much of the responsibility. So after a while, after a few months, and they were going, I got out of it. And another thing, my husband didn't understand enough German to enjoy it, see? So I backed out of it, but up until recently, it was still in existence. And they, had to pay taxes, so when they gave up, they had quite a little money left in the bank, so they still needn't go out to dinner once in a while or go on a trip till they have that money used up. They paid it in themselves, so they're using it up.
What was the name of the club?
Fidelitas. Latin, you know. You know what the word means, you know.
Why didn't they give it a German name?
Well, the Germans know Latin a lot. They often use the Latin name for things. So it was voted on. I thought it was a crazy name. I wasn't for it, but the majority wanted it.
What did you want to call it?
I had no suggestions what to call it, but Fidelitas out the layout, you know, too funny for too. It had no familiar sound. I don't know what you could. All those small clubs of women, for instance, are called a Kränzchen. Kränzchen. A grant is a wreath of leaves, of flowers. And of course, the women used to, in olden times, go with their knitting and crocheting, and they sit around like a wreath and do gossiping and do recipe exchanging. So all those clubs were called Kränzchen. And I said, why not call it a Grunchkin? And they said, oh, we don't want such an old-fashioned name. So they came up with this Fidelitas there. Well, it could have been called anything German was so unpopular. You don't know what it was to have children in school. And, you know, they took on the American anti-German attitude. And no matter what you personally experienced in your homeland, or no matter how good your relatives were, and they eyed them with the suspicion that they would let a Hitler get strong and do what he did, and they never brought my son, nor the girl he married, nor all the German mothers that I know, never brought American friends home. They were, you might say, ashamed of us, that we were German. You see, people that young, you know, 16 and 18 and 19, they haven't got the wisdom of age yet. They don't know how to categorize, you might say. So that was another thing a lot of parents had to go through. Some of them had to suffer because they brought up their children to Germany, to, you know, and they took them out, no matter how good their how good a help they were in factories where they I know of one case, those boys were just a genius at train construction, and they lived for that. They just loved it. Well, overnight they were let out because they had a suspicion and they were born here. And just because, and it was funny, their mother always said to me, why didn't I send my boy to this German Saturday school? I wanted no part of it, and I never let him go. And her boys, and she was so prone to have them educated and become somebody on their own. Well, they couldn't get no work, no how. And eventually they had to join the army. They came into that age and all. And but because of what we went through with those new Germans, those young ones that had come over, with the government, I told you some about it. I was always wishing that the, that agency, FBI, was going around to a lot of them to look into their activities and all. Nobody ever came to me, and I was wishing they would, because I was so mad the way the government officially in the court stuck to Tim and me had to pay the money, that were fighting them, you know.
Did the German Club in Long Beach have a building or land or
anything? No, they were too young. I mean, they only started after the war, you see. They were too young a club. That comes through the years and time. And then after an experience like that, when they lost everything, thousands and thousands of dollars, every place was closed, and they had to practically give it away, they weren't so prone to invest money. I mean, it's Germans like them, you know.
So where did the German Club in Long Beach have any?
Oh, they in various places. They're in restaurants where they had an extra room, and at one time they congregated, they couldn't find no other place, but I could go there now, I know exactly where it is. It was the Colored People Club of a very famous club here. You know, they have this big deer up on the roof in their main building, Elks. This was the Colored Hall, only Colored Elks went there, but they were willing to rent it to us. You know, we just went there once a month when they had private meetings, you know, where they had arranged things, picnics and things. They would meet in a private home. Why they needed the hall is because they always had music and dancing and singing and such. For instance, that was, then they met at the Art Fellows Hall for a while. If it was too much, too big and too expensive, they couldn't afford it, you see. So that's why it went out of commission, too, because they could never find the right kind of a hall. And once it started, it, like myself, they all got old, and the young ones, they are absorbed by the American societies, and, you know. They get absorbed. It's not like it used to be that this place was Italian, and this was Irish, and this was German, and this was French. New York City had all neighborhoods where only one kind of people lived years ago.
It was never like that in Long Beach.
No, there weren't too many Germans in Long Beach. I mean, there were now plenty of property owners, and even where I am here, half of them understand German. They come from German backgrounds. Don't know maybe how to speak it, but they know it, because Anaheim was founded by some Germans. And at one time, there was the difference of the language in America was only 6 people. It would have been German if these 6 didn't speak, were more to the English, and English became the. So from the very beginning of America, there were always quite a few Germans. You see, in Europe, it's not just Germany that speaks German. It's part of the Swiss, it's the Austrians, it's all those neighboring countries. Some of them are under the Russians now. They all speak German. If they don't speak it pure German, they speak with their accent in it, but they know it. So that's the story of the German club here. Then, you see, there is that always that hiking club, the Nature Friends, they call themselves. And they are in the Serramatta Mountains. They have a home. And up in the high Sierras, they have a ski place that they built themselves. And they didn't stop. They didn't know. They just didn't need. Or if they met, they met just among themselves, maybe 10 or 20 going on a ski tour or something. It was funny. You know, my son wanted to become a forester because he loves the mountains and all. So one year he went up to a forestry school in Mount Chester in that region. And the man, the boss of the thing, he said, "Watch that outfit over there that call themselves Nature Friends. Well, we don't trust them. They're Heinies. They're Germans." And my boy almost knew every member of them, you know. It seemed funny to him, because from the American viewpoint, you can understand why they would expect most anything, setting fires and everything, which wouldn't have been likely, but he had watched them. And he said to me, Mom, I never knew that had such a name. I said, that's only of that crazy healer. You wouldn't have experienced this at all if it wasn't for that guy out there. Yes.
Okay.
One of the nice things in Long Beach was the red car. It started early in Long Beach history, not around 28 or something like that. And all the years it helped Long Beach because it took people that couldn't find work here in a short time to Los Angeles or to Hollywood or to any place. And when it finally was taken out of service, all the people, most of the people in Long Beach felt bad about it. It was such a nice thing to have and to know that it was there if you needed it. And I, and we especially, it always clanged by our building, and I didn't need no timetable to find out when I should go and get ready. I knew when she went down, and I knew how many minutes she took to turn around and come back, and you could get on. That was nice. And also to go to the theater in Los Angeles, because it would come back at midnight and so on. You could take advantage of it.
What kind of places did you go on the red car?
Oh, you usually went downtown to where the end station was, and then on 3rd Street, on 4th Street in Maine was the building where they went to. That was the same building was used for the buses later on. And from there, this is pretty central, and you could go any place or take it along Los Angeles streetcar. You know, for a long while I lived in Los Angeles, and it was something special when you could spend a Sunday in Long Beach. You didn't get through with all that you could do and see in one day. You see, alone the park is very much bigger than it is today, much larger. And old people would come and go to that speed and not just love even from Long Beach, because there's a space there, a certain space where people, like in Ireland, could say anything they wanted to, even against the president or anything, if you know it's hard to say something. Because they either got booed off, or some people liked what they said, you know. A lot of people always have a lot to complain about, any place they live.
After you moved to Long Beach, did you ride the red car?
Oh, often. I used to drive up, you see. By then I had charter cars, you know, in Robinson's and so on. And we didn't live in the Lyle anymore at more time. I always had a couple there. And so if I didn't want to drive alone, I'd take the red car. Sure. I had a schedule when it could go home.
And you went there to shop?
Shop, yes, in the big stores, you know. Mm-hmm. Went to at first, one of the big stores was always Bullock's, and then the Broadway, and then, nowadays that Broadway is terrible. I even hate to walk through it. But then it was pretty nice, in Los Angeles, to go to those stores. And I had lots of friends up in Highland Park, and we had there was one hotel there on 15th Street there in that lobby, a nice hotel in that lobby. We always met. We went 3 or 4 and we'd go out for lunch and or go to a matinee on a Wednesday or on a Saturday. Seeing the tenants could do all that too, you know, once they were acquainted with the things. We had some pretty good musical programs up there Long Beach. That was long before they built the music center, of course. That was nice there, too.
Yeah, after you finally got your charge account, were there any advantages to it? Like you said, you could the people who had charge accounts during the war were the ones who
Well, now when that time is over, that has never come anymore. That only a war can do that, you see. No, I didn't need the charter concert hall because I owe that much money. But it was thing of prestige. It was what should I say? It was more a thing of ego, not of necessity, because I could. And I didn't tell my husband he didn't have to sign anything. So I bothered him with it. I didn't make big debts of any kind.
Did you get any special advantages after you finally got it?
No. You know, I went up to Reno one time with a friend from San Francisco, a woman, and one of the few checkpots I ever made, I had a half a dollar left, and we had a couple hours to take the bus back to San Francisco. I was staying with her. And I said, oh, I'm not going to take this half a dollar home. And went into a half a dollar machine and got a checkpot and five pots of nylon stockings. Anybody could have had that money for my pot, but the stockings, that was something. You know, they were so scarce, you wouldn't believe it then, because they needed nylon for a lot of things in the wartime. So that was one, and there were quite a few things that wasn't plenty for. But, you know, you had Mexico so close, there was a time where you couldn't get hardly steaks or anything. You just went down to Mexico for a weekend and bought all you want and brought it back. We lived those days in Palm Springs. And so it was not far to go to Mexico, to Mexicali. But I got very sick one time, so I never went again. We had a neighbor, an actress, that was Mexican, and she had a big station wagon, and I used to go with her. She went simply just to stop in the Mexican store. She was born Mexican, but she came from a very famous circus family. And you remember that film, The Blue Angel, with Emil Jennings? She did all the trapeze work in there that showed with that picture, and she played before kings in Europe. She had combs and gifts from royalties from all over. And you know, they had a trailer next to us when we were in the trailer park, and she was a very temperamental woman, and I gave up going with her because she always had a bottle of beer left in a towel. And go with one hand and drink with the other, and I couldn't go for it. And then they sold too. But I learned a lot about Mexico through her. She would rattle it off, you know, and get her stuff much cheaper than I did. I know that. I had to pay the full price. And you know, what we are to the Mexicans, they take advantage of it if they can.
What did you live in Palm Springs?
And on the main, first event, we lived on the main boulevard. Then they had only that one. I know Palm Springs from when it was a tiny village. But then
how do you know Palm Springs from when it was a tiny village?
When it was just a little cluster of houses. When I first came to California in 1932,
yeah.
Palm Springs wasn't what it is today by far.
Yeah. Did you go out there?
When our first car, my son and I had, we loved to go in the desert for the wildflowers and things. And he was about 17 when I bought a car for $65 a Ford. Pretty, the girl that had it went to New York for good, and oh, did that car shine. It would be worth all kinds of money today. It was a Tin Lizzie. And the man my son worked for helped him to learn driving, Mr. Brandis. And so I remember the first time we went to see the wildflower in Palm Springs in that vicinity with this little car. And after we knew that there's more, we were great on hiking. I was too. We went often. But when I married Mr. Berger, he had arthritis and was in pain a lot, and he liked the desert for that reason, because he could bake in the sun and all that. So the first time we were on the main Palm Springs Boulevard, what's it called, the main drag there? I should know. We had to help to pay for the lights that were in each farm, later on.
Okay.
And this guy, we rented with my friend from Long Beach, the people that had the hotel, and her husband who was smart and everything, and so we paid $100 and some odd a week for a nice apartment with a swimming pool and all. I can't tell you the name right now. It's opposite from where Bullock is on Palm Canyon. And he grabbed the one bedroom right away, and I didn't know right away why, but he saw already that the second bedroom was facing the street where you got the traffic all night long. And we had paid that week, and we were mad that he got us, you know, like that without even talking it over. So we went out, and Trail Park was in existence then already. It was very small. And Trails was something new to us anyhow in that way of living. And we fell in love with it right away. We had the income, and people working for us, we could do it. So we right there, and then in the middle of the week, we bought a trailer. And a national, it was called. I never forget that first trailer, and had a wonderful spot under a pepper tree, shady and nice. I still have pictures on it from. Well, anyway, then Charlie Fiedler and his wife, they bought a trailer too in that week. But then after that, you see, we had a car to drive up, and when they bought it, they were our friends and helped us get established in Long Beach, so they knew we would take them along all this, and we did. And so we just loved Palm Springs, and Desert Hot Springs had these hot mineral waters, and it was easy to drive over there. My husband would take those baths, and it would help him a lot. And we'd go for a week, and we'd go for a week. We had a trailer there, about a year. And the man that owned it wanted to sell us that trailer so badly for $9,000. It had maybe, in those days, it maybe 12, 14 trailers. But it had a lot of Indian land in the back of it, way back for bees and a potato field and all that. And we were too green at it. And Charlie Fiedler thought it was a good thing, but she couldn't go into business with him, our friendship. But his wife and I had for years, we'd have broken up. He did shady things. Anyhow, we weren't about to go into any business with him. So we didn't buy it. But you know that trailer park, after it was cleaned up and all, sold for $90,000. And oh, we could kick ourselves, my husband, too, because he liked the trailer park and he could have tinkered around. Well, anyway, on a couple of chances in Palm Springs, we could have gotten rich, Jeff, my husband would have written. Everything was so cheap. When I look at those hotels now in that land, a whole acre you could have for $5,000, and subdivided. He said he was retired and he wasn't going to bother about money. He had enough to get along, and he was against it. So nothing ever materialized, except I talked him into buying a lot out in Palmer Village. And we had, our lot went into the land that President Eisenhower later on built his desert home on. We had a choice spot, and when I did sell it, I sold it much too soon because my husband couldn't see why we had to pay tax on a lot that had nothing on it. We were going to build. At first, we thought we would build out there. Well, anyway, when we sold it, we made quite a little money out of it, so if we held on to it, it went up 1,000% and more in time to come because the people that didn't want to mix with the Palm Springs crowd built out there, you see. It was the Helm Ranch right nearby where all the presidents stayed when they went down there. And Palm Springs was a nice place. Today I hardly know it anymore. It's so built up. And so once the Jewish people all moved in and made money there, it's got to have a different place, you know. All the movie stars bored, and everybody, it wasn't like that at first for a few years until they could see a money-making proposition in it. And it grew.
Did you start going there after you moved to Long Beach or before? Or?
No, only in from Long Beach with the Fiedlers. They had known it already. I went with my son a couple of times, but never just stay there. I had my beauty shop. We'd start out at 4 or 5 o'clock on a Sunday morning and come home at night and visit all the Joshua Monument and all those places in the desert. We were out almost every Sunday, you know, when I was single. And I liked the desert. The desert, at first, you got to learn its colors and its moods to enjoy it. You don't like it first. You just see nothing but a pile of sand at first until you know the plants and things. Well, I enjoyed that time. Then, when we knew we liked pumpkins and we had that trailer, we found out, because we weren't going to put much money in that venture, we found out that we should buy a house. So we went out and asked for the cutest little house when I took walks on the Indian reservation. We could buy the house, yes, but not the ground, ever. The ground was on the reservation of some Indian family, you see. That was our first house, and we had that a few years, and sold it then. After we fixed up, we sold it for the double and bought in town a bigger house. You know, I was very sorry afterwards, and you have extra bedrooms. You have company all the time in Thompson. And so we had that for a while, but that house had a lot of land, and my husband had thought he'd buy and build income property on it. But by that time, you see, having those two houses, I thrilled to hear it, rentals with renting. And I did want some more in the desert. We rented our place one time, and a policeman, and how he took advantage of it, and had drunken parties there and all. I wanted no part of renting in Thompson. So then we bought out in the vicinity where the movie stars, where they had houses all, well, they're not closed up, but you see them. On Marcus Place, we bought a two-bedroom and then home with a garage, a much better place, you know. And lived there, but you never know how many friends you have when you have a house like that. And my husband said after a few years, that's crazy. You wash on Mondays and Tuesdays from the company. You cook all day Saturday. Nothing doing. They're going back in the trailer park. So then they couldn't sell this right away. This house was expensive. So we traded it with a couple from Long Beach for a duplex and kept that duplex for our home when we were in Long Beach for a while. And that was it that way. And then when we didn't have any property in Long Beach, we bought a trailer again, you see. And then we all went to the Rancho Trailer Park, right by the bend. Then when we got to Indio, there is that Waffle House, right, and all the stores at North. It's a big city now. And when they decided, Palm Springs decided, they were going to put lamps in all those palm trees all through town. We were all taxed for it at head property, you know. So, you know, it was an experience. And it was nice while it lasted. We were up there until 63. Then, when I had trouble coming up in the Isle and Long Beach, we gave it up for a while, and my husband started to go to Phoenix for a month or two whenever he couldn't stand the pain. And when changes came with the law, I had to be there. If I threw one out, I had to be around until the next one is installed, until you see if you can do it and whatnot, you know. So that went by too. Now I have all the right and all the time to rest. And this is the best place for it.
Why did your husband go to Phoenix?
Well, it was so hot. Well, it was so hot. It was hotter in Phoenix. And he found company there playing cards and playing shuffleboard. And in Palm Springs, it got so modern by then and so dressy affair, and he wasn't for that. He liked it then in Phoenix better. And he, later on, we went to, I used to bring him down because I needed the car. And then maybe take half the night and drive back to Long Beach. I didn't stay with them in those times because my attention was needed in the city. So I used to do a lot of driving through all that, you know. And my husband, as the years went on, he got more and more hard of hearing. And I couldn't trust him. I couldn't take the driving away from him because of the man. It's funny that somehow hooked up with his head, manliness. My son used to say, Ma, he's going to kill you someday. He drives terrible. And for a long time, he would want to drive halfway down to Long Beach, and he might drive the other day. I was so glad when one day he decided not to drive anymore. I was so glad, you know, without having to force him. He drove until he was 80. I drove until I was 86. You know, because I hear enough and could see enough. Now I wouldn't want to drive anymore with my eyes. It got so that I couldn't read the street names. And I was considering maybe to stop soon when I was in Long Beach. But then that accident happened. And in another year, I would have had a good license again. My license, I still have them. The two of them look good for a year yet. It happened in 66, the same year that I moved to Leisure World.
When your husband went to Phoenix, did you own a place there, or did you rent it? What?
No, we rented in a court, and he got to know those people, you see. Why he could go by himself, he loved to cook, and he had a walker, you know, then already. Later on, he was in a wheelchair. And he loved to cook and shop for himself. He didn't mind that at all. That's why I could go to Europe so often, even while he was alive. He didn't mind. But if he was home and I went to Europe, I always got a friend of mine that lived in the Lyle to stay with him and do his, you know, and I didn't want him to be all alone. I used to go for 4 weeks or so. I wanted him to go so badly, but he's been so much out of the country here that he just refused. You know, the Black Forest has lovely springs, hot springs, from natural, from the ground, and I wanted him so badly to meet my people just once, but I could never. He said, I've been out of America often enough. I like it here. You can go, he said, you know. So that's how it was. He had a very nice life, although he was sick a lot, but he wasn't a crybaby. He wouldn't let on and how bad he felt. He was, he was a regular he-man, if you can imagine. He was ashamed to tell you that he had a sore leg or something. And if you understood him, his strong points, his pluses, and his minus, you know, you can live around it and still have a happy life. We had lots of fun together. Although some of my friends said, oh, gee, how you can handle that Pete. I said, I don't handle him. He makes the tone and I dance according to it. You know, when the doctor thought I shouldn't live alone, we started looking around. I didn't want to go to Oxnard to my son because I didn't want to keep him from selling his big place. That was my main reason. And I wouldn't have had any friends up there. Friends were all down here. So I said to my son, no, I think he was kind of relieved when I refused. And we found this year, he looked at about 8 feet. But here, you're personal care, when you get that old that you can't take care of yourself anymore, there is this portion of it over in that other building where those people are. If they get sick, they have a little hospital. If the sickness is very bad, of course, they're going to build on this acre a Lutheran hospital. So I thought, for all eventualities, I don't expect to get sick, and maybe I don't, but if something happens and you don't want to bother anybody, and you have the money, you're well off here. The food is excellent. And you know, a lot of people, you can't satisfy them no matter what. I'm not satisfied. I came in here not expecting perfection. You find them nowhere. You've got to be able to put up with things the way they are, because if they would be too bad, I wouldn't have stayed here 3 months. Trial time to decide whether you want to do it or not. So, but I feel like I'm well taken care of, and I like it, and you meet a lot of nice people. Mostly, the women by themselves are mostly all teachers. And I have a few retired doctors here, and about 6 ministers retired, and, you know, nice people. And what I dreaded of going in is it was like most of the places where all these sick people and disheartened people and unhappy people sit there, and you have to look at them all the time. We don't have that here. If you're not that much alive anymore, you can't stay in this building. You have to go somewhere else, you know, the other building. So I think that I decided pretty well, you know, for the rest of my days. And as I say, by nature I'm an optimist. I always find something that's interesting. So, and lots of times I get invitation of friends that I can get away if I wanted. For Thanksgiving, my cousin in the valley, they bought a boat that 6 people. I'm invited over for Thanksgiving. My son will get me. And
In the
San Fernando
Valley?
No, she's not in the San Fernando. She lives in the Simi Valley, and the boat they have up in Oxnard.
Oh, okay.
They have a little factory there, but for the government. The young people, and they're very successful, they don't know how to spend their money also. They bought a boat, and they like it. They have 2 children that are almost teenage. So that's a nice experience. And another girl called me up and said, "Why don't you come to me to Apple Valley? I left my Thanksgiving dinner there." So if I had no invitation, I wanted to go. She drives there. I would have had that. You see, a lot of people that are in homes, they have closed the door on life. They don't do anything anymore. They don't go anything anymore. Not interested, and then that's why how they sour. So you have to do your part in order to be lucky with being healthy and happy. You have to do your part. You cannot just say 16 prayers a day and put your hands in your lap and expect things to fall down from heaven. It doesn't work that way. Well, the whole session I had with you was a pleasure, and I don't know how to thank you. And any time, you come and see me if you want to. You think of some more questions. I used to know every mile there. There's one stretch, 127 miles through the desert, and when you drive that alone, I drove already when there was no radio in the car. It can be an awful lonesome ride.
Yeah. What was it like when you, how did you come into Phoenix? What was it like when you went there first time?
Well, the first time did you get there with somebody at first we went to Phoenix. Oh, yes, people from German Club had relatives in Phoenix, and they took us along one time. And those people, those relatives had to go there because the father was a lifter constantly in dry air. And then my husband got the idea that would help him with the arthritis, and of course they boosted it up, and at first they had visions of us moving there. But you see, we had the lull, and that dragged out, and I don't think I would have myself, without a reason, moved to such a hot climate constantly. So like for people that need it for their health or something like that. But it was a nice city. I got to like it. And I liked the better Tucson after a while. we went to Tucson for quite a while and got to, I found a nice religious science church there and made some friends. You know, sometimes I would stay a whole week with my husband if things were running smooth at home. But I was the one that had attempted if something happened. And I was never sure when the phone call came.